You are about to hear the Parental Dadvisory Podcast. Parental Dadvisory contains lots of adult content. You may hear swearing, sex talk, discussions about the challenges of parenting, drink recipes, and more. Parental Dadvisory is real. It's raw and definitely not safe for work. Consider that your fucking warning. So put up your feet, grab your favorite adult beverage, and behold the glory that is the Parental Dadvisory Podcast. Previous statement about putting up your feet drinking does not apply to those that are driving. Here's Doug and Jay.
Welcome back, everyone. This is one of your two hosts, Jay, here with my co-host, Doug. We have two guests with us this evening. Chris Carlton is joining us again at this point. Like I said, you can call him an honorary co-host. And we are thrilled to have a very special guest, Brianna Titone, a representative out of the state of Colorado. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks very much. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, as when Jay mentioned that we were going to have you on, I was quite excited. So, yeah, this is going to be pretty great. And thanks again for joining us, like Jay said.
My pleasure.
So the topic of our podcast tonight is probably widely known, or at least I hope it is right now across the nation. I wanted to talk about two items that are out there. One would be the Don't Say Gay bill. That is progressing here in my state of Florida, and the other being the recent, I guess you would call it, comments and progression of changes to the law in the state of Texas with Governor Abbott declaring with his AG that trans care for children is essentially legally a crime and can be reportable and punishable. I know at least for Doug, Chris, myself, and of course you, that this is something we disagree with. It is important. And we wanted to have a conversation, you know, one about what is happening in these two states, as well as some other states out there, what we can do to be better resources to the children that are going to be affected by this. One of the reasons I like that Chris is here, he is actually a teacher in Michigan. I know, Chris, you said prior to the podcast scheduling, your class kind of got a hint of what is going on with this legislation that's being pushed through in Florida, and they weren't too happy about it.
Yeah, that's I did mention it to them the other day and explained that we would have the representative on, so I wanted to know if they had any questions or their thoughts or feelings on the bill, because I teach seventh graders. Like, they're not adults, but they definitely feel like they're adults. And so explaining to them what these bills are and what they say, and more particularly how they affect them in Michigan, right? Because they're like, well, that's Florida and Texas. And I was like, but it becomes a very slippery slope. It becomes all it takes is one state to pass this and it trickles down. So this affects everyone. Like, this is something that, you know, affects students nationwide, not just in Texas or just in Florida. They're just the two trying it right now.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to invite Representative Titone on, because again, while we are hearing about it in states like Florida and Texas, I think the last research I had on it is there's potentially 15 other bills up in other states, including Tennessee, Kansas, Indiana, and Oklahoma, where you have states proposing to restrict how LGBTQ identity and issues and history are taught in schools. So I think it's a very important conversation to have because this is happening in multiple states right now. And while not all of the bills are the same and not all of the language is the same, it does have a huge effect on the youth. And before we get into talking about it, to give you a better idea of why I felt that our guest was so important to have on, Representative Titone, I believe I have the facts correct here, but I read that you were the first openly transgender state legislator elected in the state of Colorado and the fourth in the United States.
Yeah, that's technically true. The reason why I was fourth and not tied for second with two others is because my election wasn't called until Friday. And election day was Tuesday, so I had to wait. My race was that close. And I give credit to those who won on election day.
And I saw that it was pretty, like, within a couple hundred votes on the first one, correct?
Yeah, on election day, I was losing by 219 points, votes. And I had to wait for about 30,000 more votes to be counted to tip the scale towards me. And I won by 439 votes at the end. And that was out of a total of about 50,000 votes.
That's pretty impressive. And now I know a lot of people say Colorado is a pretty, I mean, because of their openness to, you know, marijuana laws and things like that, that Colorado is a fairly progressive state. But Colorado does have quite a bit of rural parts of it. Is your district in more of a rural part? Or is it more of centered more close to cities or things of that ilk?
Well, my district is predominantly the city of Arvada, and that's actually the seventh largest city in the state. It's kind of a suburb of Denver, just to the northwest, just before you get to the mountains. But historically, it has been a lot more rural, and it's just really been built up over the last 10, 15 years or so, about the time that I've been there. If you know, you drove through 15 years ago, you would see a lot more cow pastures and horse farms, things like that. And now it's been developed a lot more, and we've had a lot more people moving into the district that's from out of state, bringing some more progressive values. But, oops, sorry about that. I hope you can edit that out.
Leave it
absolutely.
you know, the state of Colorado has a lot of different values and a lot of different political leanings. It's not just progressive, and it is dominated in the more city focused areas in the Front Range, but there is a pretty twisted history of Colorado, especially when it comes to groups like the KKK. They had a pretty big stronghold in Golden, which is right next door, and even in my city of Arvada as well. They had a pretty big presence, and I mean, there's still some of that going on. In fact, there's some anti-Semitic stuff being distributed in my district just a few weeks ago. So there's still a lot of pockets of very, very extreme ideologies in my district. There's a lot of big churches. There's a lot of churches in my district. One of them is very conservative, and it's right in the middle of my district. And when I decided to run for the district, and I looked at the numbers in 2016, Hillary Clinton won the district by 12 votes. And, you know, that was 11 more than I needed to win. That's how I looked at it. So, you know, I looked at it in that respect, that it was possible because there were enough people to vote for a Democrat. And in the previous election, in that 2016 election, the Republican who won my seat in the state house won the election by 14%, which was over 6,000 votes. So it was looked at as an impossible race because my district has been historically conservative, and it was drawn to be conservative by the Democrats in 2010. They said, where are we going to put all these Republicans? And they put them in House District 27. So it took a while for that district to tip the scales to grow and become more progressive over time. And they needed a good candidate to jumpstart that effort to elect more Democrats.
That's awesome. Yeah. And I think I saw online when I was reading some of the history of your campaign that when you ran for reelection, there were actually some pretty hateful ads and money spent trying to, you know, keep you from being reelected. I believe at one point you were actually dead named in some of the ads that they were putting out.
Yeah. Yeah. They definitely did. You know, I got spared in my first election from having these terrible ads because nobody expected me to win, and they didn't think they had to do that kind of stuff. The second time around, they pulled out all the stops and, you know, all their opposition research that they did to try to come up with something to throw me under the bus. And, you know, we made it backfire in their face because we took those ads. I talked to the media about it. We framed it in a really good way that was, they were baseless claims about me. They had nothing to really say about me. And we ended up turning those attack ads into fundraising for me. And I ended up fundraising $20,000 in the last week of the campaign. And that helped me get my message on TV and in front of more people, which I didn't have the money to do previously. So if there's these kinds of claims that they do are just, you know, desperate. They're desperate moves to try to get people to vote and get angry. But it actually made people angry at them for going low on these baseless things.
Absolutely. And I think that your accomplishments speak for themselves. Again, in my research, you have what, 15 years or more as a registered professional geologist, multiple degrees in geology, physics, geochemistry, software. You were a volunteer firefighter, part of nonprofit organizations, and then you serve on the chair of the Legislative LGBTQ Caucus, Joint Technology Committee. You're a member of the Energy, Environment, Health and Insurance and Agriculture, Livestock and Water Committee. So there's so many things that I see that you are committed to, you know, working on and fixing here, and so many accomplishments coming out of that, that I hope that our listeners, be they adults, teenagers, children, see what can be accomplished if you put your mind to it. So again, I want to thank you for being here.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much. We appreciate that.
So one of the things that I saw that we were talking about, the Don't Say Gay and the criminalizing transition care for between Florida and Texas, there is a bill that you worked very hard on called the Gay and Trans Panic Defense Bill. Could you explain what that is and how that maybe is that related? Not related because it came before these bills, but how is it compared to those? Like, is it, I'm not saying they're comparable. I mean, in the sense that, I did this because of this, and they're going the opposite direction, clearly. But what was the Gay and Trans Panic Defense Bill at its core, if we could ask that?
Sure, yeah. The Gay and Trans Panic Defense Bill really came from the Matthew Shepard trial, where, if you recall, Matthew Shepard was beaten to death because he was gay. And the defense that the defendants put forward was to say, I found out he was gay and I freaked out and couldn't control myself and I beat him up. And that's just an absurd thing to use as a defense, but that was what they were using. And when other defense attorneys caught wind of that attempted defense, they tried to apply it in other places, and some defendants did get off on the charges. So we just didn't want that defense to be used. We don't want your identity or your sexual orientation or anything that has to do with your gender expression be an excuse for someone to do something heinous to someone. So that particular bill, We did that during the pandemic, and it was we ended up killing the bill because we were just getting rid of a lot of our bills on the books because we had to speed things up. I found out that they'd killed the bill in the Senate, and I said, wait a minute, no, we need to bring this bill back. We need to do this now. And a big part of why I said it was urgent to do that now was that we were hearing the cheers and the cries of the folks outside the building during the George Floyd protests. And, you know, Black Lives Matter was something they were saying over and over and over again. And who were the most vulnerable people that this bill would protect? Trans women who are Black. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to make sure that that bill got brought back and got brought back that year. We ended up getting it through in 3 days, and we had only one no vote in the entire General Assembly. So it was a real big victory to get that. And since we did our bill, I think there were at least two or three more states that adopted that policy after we did. So I think we were number 10 or 9 or something like that.
You know, it's a rough week because going into the history of some of this with the pre-teenagers and looking at what why adults, right? I guess this is what frustrates me the most is you look at these laws and everyone has to fight so hard to do the right thing, right? At the end of the day, why can't we just treat people like people? Like my teenagers in my class get that. They get like, you just treat everyone with respect. It doesn't matter where on what spectrum you fall on. Just be a good human being. And there's so much of that. And you can see the hurt in their faces because some of them have family members who are LGBTQ. Or they themselves aren't quite sure where they fall. And you can just see like I hate having to be the person who tells them, honestly, it's not always a great world they're moving into, but there are people out there trying to turn it around and do the right thing. So, you know, I guess because of that, I wanted to thank the representative for like standing up for my students who will be future adults, that they can become adults in a much better world than they're coming up in now.
Well, you know, Chris, I got to say, I am so impressed with the youth right now. And it's so encouraging that I never really imagined, you know, this new generation of kids really getting it and really being accepting. I remember high school in such a bad way. You know, I wasn't out then. I had a secret. I used to wear women's clothing any day that wasn't a gym day. That I didn't understand anything. There wasn't a lot of information. And I was terrified about being found out about. And I was afraid of high school students for a really long time after I graduated because I always thought that they were the same as when I went to school. And I actually substitute taught at a high school and I was super nervous about it because I didn't know what to expect. And the high school students were a lot better. And, you know, even since then, the younger kids are just, they're just like, hey, you're my friend. You're cool. Let's go play. This is awesome. And that's just so encouraging that the gender expression and the sexuality is just becoming such a non-issue that it's it really warms my heart that the future is going to be a lot better place for people who want to be themselves. And we're getting there. And we just need the adults to stop doing stuff like what's happening in Florida. I mean, this the actual opposite of what kids are doing. Why are we having kids tell us what the right thing to do is? You know, that's a serious role of reversal there. We should be encouraging the kids to do the right behavior and the opposite's happening. And what's going on in Texas is just appalling. It's so scary that they've become the tattletale state. It's who can we tell on right now for doing something we don't believe? And they are always going on and on about parental rights and that parents know best. But it seems like that's only the case when the parents agree with the viewpoints that they have, that they're right. And that's not what we should be encouraging. We should be encouraging a universal sense of that parents are right, if we're going to say that, and not just go with this guise that, oh, well, parents are right only when they're right, when we think they're right.
To expand upon the point both of you are talking about, I recently saw that with one of my own children. And Doug, you'll probably love this because we haven't gotten to talk about it since our break on the podcast. So we were out to dinner with the whole family, and you know, the kids were joking around, and at one point, you know, I had inquired of my daughter, you know, are your pronouns, your preferred pronouns that you told me when we lived in Michigan, are they the same? You know, how's life going? And they were like, well, I have something to tell you. Maybe I'll just let my brothers tell you. And it was one of those moments of clarity, because the thing that they wanted to tell us was that they're lesbian. They're a fifth grader, so they already have this identity, you know, that they're growing and going through. But what was interesting about it, with the whole I want my brothers to tell you, is that, like, even though we are a very progressive family, and I've always preached openness and acceptance, they are so used to seeing things like this in the news where adults aren't understanding, that they were still afraid to tell me and my wife. Like, it's this just overall idea that adults aren't as understanding as their own peers or even their siblings.
It's really funny because my students know me well enough to know that I'm always going to listen to them, right? It's just who I am. I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to hear what you have to say. And that's just who I am. So, like, it's required me to do a little bit of growing as an adult, because, like, I am a 38-year-old heteronormal, like, giant ogre of a man. But to be able to help these kids understand, like, that means I have to listen and not judge them. It means if they, like, have questions and I don't know the answer, I'm not going to shoot down their thoughts. I have to go, you know, help them figure these things out. And if it's a dangerous situation, talk to the parents. It hasn't been. But, you know, my job as a teacher is, like, kind of like a foster parent. My job is to go, I'm going to give your student, your kid, when they're with me for those 6 to 8 hours, the safest place where they can be the best version of themselves, right? And that wasn't necessarily, when it comes to LGBTQ topics, an area where I grew up in. Like, the city I grew up in was uber conservative, and you just didn't talk about it. You just, no. So it's a lot of growing and understanding when these kids come to me, and I'm like, I'm going to listen to you. I may not always understand right away, but I'll do better to figure it out.
Yeah, to that end, I mean, I'm not sure what your evolution was, represented on, about your coming out or coming, being able to be public about who you are. But, you know, I have several kids who are LGBTQ and one who's trans. And the process was not like, it took them years to get to the point where they were able to just be themselves and feel comfortable even telling us, even though we have always in our house been very much, you can tell us anything, we will talk about everything, and this is an open and safe space. We've always been that way. But there's still that, I imagine, I'm not sure how it was for you, but there's a fear of rejection for people that are supposed to love you unconditionally. And seeing things like this bill in Texas, which, by the way, there is a judge that stopped one of the cases that was being investigated, but that's not a universal shoot down of that bill yet, or that law. If it's a law bill, I'm not sure. But that gets heard on the 11th. But that thing, like, knowing that their parents could be prosecuted, their friends, their teachers, it's just another way to try to nail kids down from being able to express themselves. And I mean, I'm 50. So, like, the kids I saw when I was younger, if they were gay, they basically got beat up. It was not a pleasant time to be someone who is gay or trans. You didn't have that option. Now it got better as we went along. It's still not great by any stretch, but I guess my point would be, like, some of these folks think that this is just like a trendy thing, and it's not. It's you're trying to establish your identity and who you are, be that gender related or sexuality or both, because they're not inextricably linked. You know, you are who you are, and you should be able to express that. So I don't know if you're comfortable talking about your journey in that respect, Representative, but yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, this whole idea that this is a trend is just, you know, it's an excuse to not accept the reality, because, you know, the reason why people are coming out in greater numbers now is because they feel comfortable, because they see role models, because their friends are able to be themselves, and it's inspiring to them. That's why there's a trend. It's because people have been stuck in the closet for so long. From me coming out, and I came out in when I was 37, and that was, when was that? 2015. I came out in 2015 when I was 37. And since then, and because I'm visible and people see me and they hear from me all the time, there's been a lot of people who have come up to me and told me that I'm trans too, and I'm working on coming out. And there was someone in my life from the past that was a teacher that said that they were trans, and they still have to live a double life because they're not, they still can't do it. A friend of mine I went to college with came out and is doing great. Just so many different people who I've had an impact on directly. That's not a trend. Those are dominoes. And they're dominoes because they've been given the tools and the courage to be themselves where they didn't have it before. And for me, I alluded a little bit to it before. You know, I kind of knew I was different probably when I was 7 or so. And I used to watch daytime television. And, you know, Doug, you probably understand the Phil Donahue show. Most people who are younger probably don't know that one, but they would have, for comparison, it's like Jerry Springer, but not quite as bad. They had some trans people on there, and, you know, they put them on there not because they want to put them on a pedestal. They put them on there to pick apart who they are and really kind of rub in that they're weird. And that was kind of the idea that I had about someone who I felt like I could relate to, because this was someone who changed their gender. And I was like, I want to do that. But I didn't have any information about it. I didn't have any role models. There were very few gay people in my area, kind of, you know, what was alluded to before. My area was pretty conservative. So it took me a really, really long time to come to the realization that I was trans, and for a lot of different factors as well. Job prospects, safety, relationships. There were a lot of things that were just fearful about what it's going to happen if I come out as being myself. What's going to happen next? And how do I navigate that? And will I ever be able to do these things again? Those are things that really keep people in a box, and they keep people in the closet. And when people have relationships being trans, when people are elected, and when people are teachers, and people are doctors, and people are doing things as themselves, that really just shows people that being trans does not prevent you from doing anything that you want to do. you can do whatever you want, just like anybody else. And your identity does not dictate that you can or can't be that. And I wanted to be an FBI special agent, and that prevented me from wanting to come out, because I felt like I never would have even gotten an interview if they had known that. And would I have been able to keep that secret for them is still something that it will probably never be determined. But when I wasn't able to get that job was when I realized, like, you know, this was something I put a lot of my life's work into to try to get this career. And that career went away. And I was kind of left feeling like I had to reinvent myself at that point, because I had put my personal life on hold for so long because I didn't want to risk everything. And then the thing I wanted so much was the rug was pulled out from under me. That was a turning point. And I decided that instead of, you know, trying to do something for someone else, that I was going to do something for myself. And I took it upon myself to find the right kind of people to talk to, because, you know, I've talked to therapists in the past, and many of them told me that I wasn't trans and they didn't understand it and they avoided wanting to talk about it. And that's a problem in our healthcare system, especially our mental health care system, of people not understanding what the issues are and having the training in it. But I found the right people who did know, and I was able to find the courage to be myself. I found a group of friends who accepted me for who I was. And, you know, between, you know, doing the work of the therapy and having the encouragement of my friends, I was able to come out. And I thought that that was going to close a lot of doors for me. And it woke me up. It actually opened my eyes to the whole LGBT community, which I had been ignoring. I didn't want to be guilty by association of paying any attention to the LGBT community because I didn't want the label. It was like that my whole life because I didn't want to have anybody have a suspicion to even think about that I was different, that I was wearing women's clothes underneath my clothes. I didn't want anybody to know that. I didn't want anybody to suspect it or even have any suspicion. So I played the gender role that I was assigned the best way I could to keep people off the scent, so to speak. And I didn't pay any attention to the LGBT community. And when I became part of that community is when I realized that I was part of a community that was under attack, was under assault, and needed someone to step up and help. So that's where I started to become an activist. And the activism, you know, I showed leadership in the activism that I was doing. And someone said I should run for office. And it wasn't until, and I say this every time, you know, it wasn't until I saw Danica Rome and Andrea Jenkins win their elections in 2017 that really proved to me that I could be a viable candidate because I was trans. And, you know, the people who asked me to run for office said I was really qualified. And, you know, you heard Jay talk about my qualifications. I do a lot of stuff. I say yes to things. I experience life. I learn. And that is a lifetime of doing that, which got me to be the person who I am today and to be a successful candidate and a legislator in the legislature. Anybody can do it. You just have to be able to get outside your comfort zone. And the funny thing is that I got outside my comfort zone a lot when it came to doing all the things that I did before I came out. But I had a hard time getting out of my comfort zone to be uncomfortable in trying to be myself, which would have made me comfortable. It's kind of this weird thing that it's kind of a paradox. If I don't know, but does that answer your question?
I think so. I mean, that was Jay. What do you think? Because to me, that was a really informative answer. It's a thing that for me, as being just a straight white guy, like I never have to validate my existence or explain what I am. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think tying it back into Texas and Florida, you know, when you mention being your true self, coupled with the achievements and what you're going out there and saying yes to and trying things, you know, my worry is looking at what's going on in Florida right now. You know, Texas is focused on care and Florida is focused on the education side of things. And I'm going to point at Chris as an example, as an educator, and he hates when I use that term, but you know, he taught my kids. And one of the things I've always respected is Chris as an educator goes out of his way, I feel, and I know many do, to make sure that his students are seeing representations of themselves, you know, in what's available in his classroom. You know, whether that means making sure there's LGBTQIA material in the books, or, you know, African American history or Asian American history or Muslim history. Like, my worry is, right, so we have great examples of people who are out there and we're now saying, you can't have this conversation. And to the representative's point, a lot of it, people are falling back on the, oh, it should be the parent's choice to talk about it. But again, you know, even as a straight cis white male, like Doug, you and I are the same there, right? Like, so I know that growing up, I had specific teachers that I was more comfortable with talking about things, right? Because I didn't have a really good relationship with my own dad. You know, people, I got bullied in school because I didn't play sports. I liked to sing and be in chorus. And then, of course, people thought that meant I was gay. So, like, I would have those conversations with the teachers or friends that I could trust. And I built up that group. And you're now telling educators, you know, if somebody needs to have that conversation with you, you risk breaking a law, right? So, like, you can't have that representation in your classroom. You can't have that conversation. And essentially, I feel like it could lead down a very muddy path to allowing people to erase history, right? Because, like, who's going to teach about Harvey Milk at some point? Like, who's going to teach about these events in the past or even in the present, right? So, like, it is an educator at some point in your state of Colorado going to teach about your election and the, we'll say, the gay and trans panic defense bill? And then if something like what's happening in Florida were to pass there, it's just so concerning for me, because while we're falling back on the parents' rights, I feel like people are ignoring the research that is out there, the legitimate research. So, you know, I've talked about it on prior podcasts. The Trevor Project does a national survey every year. And, you know, they focus on actually talking to the youth ages, usually between 13 and 24. And I know in 2021, they have a huge report out there. But, you know, one of their things is, of everyone interviewed, all the LGBTQ youth, you know, stated those who have access to spaces that affirm their orientation or gender identity, they're reporting lower rates of attempted suicide, right? So you are taking away valid resources in care for these kids. I can't imagine being in an educator's position right now in Florida and feeling like your hands are tied. And I see the representative has a hand raised, so I'll open the floor to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just, you know, to your point about not hearing about your history, I mean, well, when I mentioned I didn't know anything about LGBT history, it wasn't all because I didn't want to learn from it, but I mean, it wasn't taught to me. None of that was introduced to me. And, you know, I could have taken a couple classes in college on it, but, you know, I didn't want to do that and get involved and take a class that would have outed me. As you said, you know, going into a theater would do that. But that's the problem. Like, if you don't ever see yourself in any role, and this, you know, goes well beyond the LGBT community, goes to, you know, different races and the whitewashing of history that has been done for so long. There's been a lot of marginalized groups that have been erased out. And that's, we need to stop doing that. We need to show kids who are very diverse all of the different ways that they have been able to show their identities represented over time, because they are there and they're not that difficult to find if you look for them on the internet, but they should be taught in the classroom and they should be presented that way. And that's the only way we're going to be able to get past this, is if young people actually know where their roots are and where they've come from and how far they've gone and where they need to go.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the representative and Jay both. Thanks, Jay, for you know, giving me accolades. My already giant head is barely going to fit out this door when I leave today. But no, I do try, and I always learn a little bit about my kids before I get them so that I can have books in my room or posters or things that are them when they walk in, right? So that that already terrifying sense of, okay, school is new, I don't know a lot of these people, they feel a little bit more comfortable. And, you know, my kids know sometimes we're going to talk about history, and sometimes history isn't great, but you need to have those conversations to figure out, to learn those lessons from the past, right? To, so that you don't repeat them, so that you understand where other people made their mistake and you can move forward. But it's just something we do. I couldn't imagine teaching in Florida. I'm very happy that I have such great support from admin and the parents I have. Because if I were in Florida and I had a student who came to me and said, you know, I'm thinking this way or I have questions, and then I had to report that student, like, or out that student to a parent, I don't, like, you would have to fire me. Like, I don't think I could do that, because we know that not all parents are always very welcoming or understanding. Like, there are amazing parents out there for sure, but there are some who don't understand it themselves, or, you know, and it becomes an abuse situation, like true abuse, not the make-believe abuse that Texas is currently having us focus on. And like, it puts these kids at such risk. You're so worried to make the parents happy and to placate the parents. What are you doing to these kids? What severe damage are you causing to these kids who will be adults because you just basically told them they didn't matter?
Hear, hear. Doug, any further thoughts?
Yeah, the harm part is really important here, I think, because it comes in a bunch of different spots, I believe. I mean, if you have if you are a child who is questioning or at a point where you're ready to affirm who you are, and you can't do that with without being afraid that you're going to be, you know, taken down, or your family is, or your friends, and just the amount of pressure. I mean, it's hard enough to be able to just be yourself as is, and then you have to take into account all the other things that might be a problem, you know, that can come about just from you being yourself. That's a head trip and a half. And I can't imagine the, like, Representative Dottone was saying earlier about therapy and how it was like having a therapist not really being able to understand what she's going through. And yeah, that's a real thing. I think it's gotten a lot better. you know, but it's still kind of a a mind game. That's bad for kids to have enough going on with just the world as it is. And having that on top of it, just making it so that they are suddenly the reason that somebody could be arrested or charged or stuff like that. That's terrible on so many ways.
Well, and you know, the argument for this is, well, we'll let the parents handle it. But we know in many cases, the parents aren't going to handle it. So that leaves these students, these like minds who need knowledge. The only source of information they have then is social media and the internet. And is that really where we want them getting information about healthy sexual habits, behaviors, and questions from TikTok and the internet? Like, there has to be somewhere where they can go that is responsible and safe and not the unlimited, unfiltered, sometimes hateful internet. Like, there, somebody did not think this through at all.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, when it comes to, you know, denying kids healthcare that are trans, I mean, it's so ridiculous that politicians are trying to say that they know what's better for these kids than the doctors who have been studying it for decades, that the politicians know better than them, that they're doing child abuse. All of a sudden, there's child abuse going on that's never existed before in any place in this entire country, probably, you know, many other places too. But now all of a sudden, this is child abuse. There's been trans kids for a very long time, and nobody has called child abuse on this. This is so manufactured. And it's exactly it, you know, that the parents are not listening to the kids. They're just not listening. And that's the problem. We have to just, you know, look, kids don't know everything. And, you know, parents are there to guide them through a lot of tough decisions. But, you know, we know each other. We know ourselves. We know ourselves better than anybody else. And a kid knows themselves better than the parent knows them. And they should trust them and trust the doctors to help them understand what decisions are best for that kid. And the science around the medical science around that is very clear that this is healthcare that helps these kids. And these policies and all of this talk about kids and, you know, trans kids in sports and they're not allowed, it's making it worse on those kids' lives because they're the topic that all these adults are talking about. These kids are now the center of this debate. And what are they supposed to do? They just want to go run away and hide, and they get depressed, and then they get bullied. There's so many things that are just so negative about this when we just need to trust the system of doctors, the way that everything works. It's just, it makes sense, and let's move on from this and just let people live their lives the way they want.
And I feel like instead of setting up funding for hotlines and tattletale lines and punishments, how about we put that money where it belongs by making sure that every school, every secondary school has a trained social worker or social workers on staff. So if you're worried about, well, my teacher is indoctrinating my student, like they could go talk to that social worker who could help them work through their things. But so many schools are not only underfunded, but especially in the areas of social work and, you know, trained psychologists and things like that to help these kids out, that's where the deficit is. Like you're punishing them for something that the schools can't fix because there's no budget.
And representation matters. And I'll say that again, representation matters. And in Colorado, We have one of the largest LGBT caucuses. I'm the chair of the caucus this year. We have 8 members in the House and the Senate. That's almost as many as in Congress, and they have 400 and something people over there. We've got 100 in our legislature. We pass laws that protect people. We do things. Our governor is a gay man. He gets it. He understands it. And what we've been able to accomplish in Colorado is create a place that's welcoming for LGBT people of all different spectrums. And we went as far last year to actually put into our standardized medical plan is trans care, so that you get that if you're on a small plan, one of the ones offered by the state, you get trans care with that. Our Medicaid covers just about everything when it comes to trans care, because we believe that when you take care of people, when you don't let them get into a crisis situation, they thrive. And then they require less emergency care. And emergency care is very expensive. So we want to make sure that people are just getting the care that they need and not have to worry about getting into a state where they're in a crisis because the system is stacked against them. They feel like nobody cares about them. And when the government fails to care about them, it just trickles down. And we're trying to bring people up in Colorado. We're trying to lift people to make sure that they have the care that they need. And, you know, I encourage other places to fight for those kinds of rights. It's about the representation, though. And it's a little more complicated than that. It's about gerrymandering and all the other sneaky ways to keep representation out. But there are ways that, you know, people need to band together and really stand up for the rights and fight for the right people to be elected, so that way these kinds of things don't happen. And you have a really good candidate in Texas. You've probably heard of him, Beto O'Rourke. And I would love to see him ouster Greg Abbott, because Greg Abbott's got to go. He is just doing so much damage to so many people, and people are fleeing Texas because they don't want to live under these draconian laws that they're passing and continue to pass.
I think we're seeing that in many states. So, you know, in recent elections, you've heard the terror in conservative news groups or in groups on Facebook of, you know, a purple Texas, because you have people like Beto running. And I think if anybody is going to have an effect on changing things for the better and maintaining representation and making sure that those voices are heard out there, like to your point, we have to really invest in these candidates and, you know, throw our support behind them. I think it's very easy to get burnt out on politics and, you know, just kind of throw caution to the wind and let whatever's going to happen. You know, I moved back to Florida from Michigan, and it's a completely different political environment here. I would have never had to worry about a don't say gay bill in the Michigan that I left. These weren't conversations I was having to have with my kids there. So now it's important for me to look at, you know, the options of candidates that are available here, or, you know, are people who are considering running, letting them know that they do have a backing. I think that it's been a very difficult transition for the family, like coming down here to a state that just essentially toppled at least my kids' understanding of things. You know, it threw them for a loop. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, that's kind of the goal of them, right? Is to make you one, have a fear, something to make their constituency afraid, and then giving them a way to maintain whatever sort of power they have. So that I think Representative Tatone mentioned earlier about the, it feels desperate, and it is. They're desperate because they're afraid of what of a diverse culture in our country actually means for them. And that's why we got to keep fighting that. Like you said, just keep pushing, keep supporting candidates who represent a broader spectrum of folks, trans, gay, you know, people of color, APAC, all of it. We need to have more folks in who don't just look like, you know, the old white guy that we always see. And, you know, we need some representation across the board, I think.
And on that note, we're coming up on an hour, so I do think we're going to start to wrap things up here. I think my final question for the representative, and maybe it's rehashing what you've already shared with us, but especially for the youth in states like Florida or Texas right now, you know, there's many of them who aren't of age to vote. How would you encourage anybody within that age group that's listening to get involved and vocalize, you know, their thoughts on these situations?
Yeah, well, it is tough when the vote is not part of your power, and kids still do have some things that they can do. You know, when we have some issues in some of our school districts here in Colorado, we see students banding together and walking out. They walk out of class, they get together and they say, we're not taking this anymore. We're going to make a statement that we don't like this by doing whatever we can to make a statement. And walking out of class altogether is a really powerful way to do that. You know, making sure that, you know, if you're able to form GSA groups or any kind of LGBT groups within their schools, that's a good way for kids to be able to feel like themselves a little bit. I feel like that may be a little bit difficult in Florida because if the teachers have those backwards views, they're not going to allow that. But, you know, they can write to their legislators too. They don't need permission to do that. They don't need to be a voter to do that. Anybody can write to their legislator. Anybody who wants to testify on a bill can get their time to testify on a bill. And anybody of any age can go down there. We in Colorado, we see kids testify all the time. And everybody listens when a kid sits there and talks. It seems, you know, everyone's really curious to find out, what is this kid going to say? And then there's some youth groups, too. There's a group in Colorado that's like a youth council. They get together and they talk about ways of trying to get the youth voice heard. Those are good places to get involved. It's tough. It's tough for kids in places like that because they just don't establish a system for them to be able to actually do anything. And that's what's so sad. You know, they still have conversion therapy. They can still send kids to pray the gay away. They can still do that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of risks that kids take if they want to be vocal about who they are, because they could be sent away to these places. And it's just a horrible thought to think that these things are happening right now in 2022. We need to start supporting people in those states. I encourage people in Colorado to reach out to people in other states. And, you know, I write op-eds in some states when I have some time to do that, to show support, to have an outside perspective on these things. But we can't just feel comfortable where we are because things are fine. And, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So we cannot be just sitting idle because we have our freedoms And if you're a cishet white guy, you have a lot of standing up to do for people. But even within the LGBT community, it seems like a lot of times the cisgender white guys who were gay got what they wanted, and you know, they kind of fizzled off in their activism. And then lesbian women got what they needed, and they fizzled off in their activism. And then now we're left with a smaller group of people who are trying to fight for themselves. And as the only trans person in my legislature, I find myself having to talk out and speak up against the things that are said about me to the people that are saying them. I shouldn't have to do that. It should be somebody else who comes to defend those people who are marginalized, who are being marginalized, to have someone else step up and take that to task to that person who's causing the injustice. And we need to really start to do that more often and take that initiative to stand up for people and not let things get overlooked.
I'm into that. Yeah. So, I don't really have a question. I just really want to say thanks so much for taking the time out of your pretty hectic schedule and joining us. You know, really super informative, and we really appreciate you being here.
Well, this is fun. We should definitely do it again, especially if you do a video version.
Absolutely. We'll make sure that you get an invite as soon as we have one of those scheduled.
All right. Anytime you want me on, just let me know. I'm happy to have a conversation with you and let you know what I'm up to.
You've been listening to the Parental Dadvisory Podcast. If you haven't done it already, be sure and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Want to get social with Doug and Jay? Check out ParentalDadvisory.com for direct links to everywhere they are online, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. One last thing. If you enjoyed the Parental Dadvisory Podcast, give it a positive review and tell all your f***ing friends about it.